Hi, everybody. Bob Claster here, and I'm your host for Funny Stuff, half an hour of comedy, which airs every Friday night here on KCRW. And tonight is a sort of special show because not only are we going to feature the comedy of Jackie Mason, but I will also play you excerpts from a telephone conversation which I had with Jackie just a few weeks ago. He was speaking to me from his dressing room, just about to go on in his big hit show. Big hit show. It's been running for about 10 months in New York, and it's the hottest ticket on Broadway still. And it's called The World According to Me, Jackie Mason. And he also has a book out called The World According to Me, Jackie Mason, and a record out called The World According to Me, Jackie Mason, and he's become a veritable cottage industry, and business is booming in the industry of Jackie Mason. But it's kind of a fascinating case, because Mason has been doing basically the same shtick for 25 years, and suddenly the world seems to have discovered him. And actually, well, I put it to Jackie this way. Now, I have a record that you put out over 25 years ago.
Right.
And I also have the record that just came out.
Right.
Now, listening to them back to back, I was really struck by the fact that your approach really hasn't changed much over the years.
I wouldn't say it changed much. I would say it's just that I got lucky that people are noticing it. It's like a guy was telling you that this is the same type of conversation 25 years ago, and after 25 years, you suddenly decide he's really an intelligent person when you thought he was an idiot for 25 years. And that's what shocks me as much as it does you. I wonder, why am I suddenly such a hit? Because I didn't change that much. I changed the jokes, but I didn't change the style. And if I told those jokes from 25 years ago, they would be just as funny today. And they would celebrate it the same way they're celebrating these jokes. And they never celebrated it then. It was a hit on television, but it didn't promote me into any degree of national stardom that I suddenly have now. Because I noticed the same thing with my album. My album is suddenly selling in huge numbers. In New York, it's number two or three of all the albums in the city.
Well, that's wonderful. But, you know, what happened to suddenly, you know, after years and years of struggling?
I think what happened was that I got the official recommendation of all the major critics in New York, screaming that it's great. And people, I think, whether they know it or not, follow the critics' advice. I mean, it's a status symbol to follow the critics' advice. It's not only an intellectual following. It's a status symbol, too. If you didn't see the hot show, you feel stupid. You're embarrassed in front of your friends. You didn't go there. It's like you didn't hear of the hot book, or you didn't hear of the new war, or you didn't read about the latest earthquake. Whatever is the hot news of the day, if you're not somehow connected with it, you feel left out and you feel stupid, like you don't know what's happening. It becomes like an IQ test for the rich.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm glad to see I'm such a hit. You know, I came here all the way from New York just to be here tonight. That's the truth. You can imagine what a sensation I am there if I had to come here to make a living. So I never even knew that I would be a comedian. It's hard to believe, but this never appealed to me as a way of life, and I never thought it would be necessary altogether because my father himself was once a big businessman. Unfortunately, he was ruined in the crash. Some big stockbroker jumped out of a window and fell on his pushcart. And he was almost wiped out. That's when my father came to me with a vicious suggestion. He said, go to work. How can I work? I got no time. I found out one thing about work. It takes a whole day. I'm not going to give up a whole day just to go to work. I got things to do. What do you think? I'm not busy. Like right now, I'm looking for a job. I'm not going to give that up just to go to work. At least this I know I got. Why should I give up something definite? For something I don't know? You don't know what I'm talking about. Well... Not only that, I'll tell you the truth, I would like to work. Unfortunately, I'm not ashamed to tell you, all my life I've had trouble with my back. I can't get it off the bed.
Well, how does performing on Broadway differ from the other sorts of performing you've done?
Well, the other sorts of performing is usually at nightclubs, and nightclubs is a very rough way to perform. You try to make the best of it, but compared to a theater, it's no picnic. In a nightclub, there's always a man trying to make a play for a woman. And he's only half interested in me. He's only waiting for me to finish. He's trying to get to her while I'm trying to get to him. I'm trying to make him laugh. Meanwhile, he's panting, he's sweating, he's wondering. He's trying to get a return on his investment. There's a big problem about the minimum, the maximum. Should he order another drink? Should he invest any more, any less? The whole thing is a promotional situation for him, and it's a joke to me. So it's a conflict of interest. It's a problem going on in a nightclub. But in a legitimate theater, you have a total involvement. Everybody is mesmerized by what the performer has to say, and if you're any good, it comes out. If it thinks it comes out too, but at least you're being judged by people who are fascinated with a show and have an immersement, a concentration, an involvement, instead of people who are just looking at you like a casual acquaintance who's disturbing them while they're trying to get somewhere.
Well, it's wonderful. How long have you been doing it there in New York?
I'm doing it in New York now 10 months.
And how much longer can you keep it up?
Well, you don't know, because it's building and building. It's becoming bigger and bigger. Every day I think it might go down. Instead, it goes up. I was up to 100%, and I've always thought that 100% is the top. Now I found out that I'm 103%. They sell all kinds of standing room tickets every single night, and that's called 102%, 103%. If you read Variety, you'll find out I'm 103%, which means they're even not only selling standing room, they're selling the room on the staircase, on the chandelier, on top of the wall, behind the curtain, for building across the street, for sending by telephones. There's all kinds of ways to see the show that nobody ever heard of before.
Well, Mazel Tov, it sounds wonderful. Tell me, does your show differ much from night to night? If I saw it 8 months ago and I saw it tonight...
If you saw it 8 months ago and you saw it tonight, you'd see at least a 50% new show.
Huh.
Maybe 70% new. Because I constantly keep in touch and involved with all the current situations, events, and ideas. And I keep trying out new thoughts and new ways to be funny so that I can consistently entertain new people in a new way, because the simple fact is that a lot of people are seeing the show 3, 4, and 5 times. Somebody made a study of the attendance here, and they were amazed to find out that 20% of the people were seeing the show at least twice.
That's amazing.
If you look at the United States of America, this is the highlight of the most significant reason why I'm here. Because we have to understand, what is it about the United States of America? Why do we live in this country? Your case, I don't know. But in most cases, there must be a reason. When you stop to think of the United States of America and what it represents, it's like Ronald Reagan said last night. Did you hear what he said? He said a brilliant thing, and don't think it's easy for Ronald Reagan to say a brilliant thing. I'm not making fun, don't get nervous. I never make fun of the President of the United States. Never would, especially a case like his. He is one of the great presidents that ever lived. With all the troubles he has now, he's probably one of the great presidents of all time. Nobody knows it because he don't do nothing. It's the first time we ever had a president who don't get involved in politics. It's not even. No matter what the problem is, he jumps on a horse, eats jelly beans, and runs. What happened? He knows that whatever's going on in this country is not his business, and that's it. You ask him any question, he's just the opposite of every president we ever had. Traditionally, every president was a subject of confusion, disturbance, misery. You remember Carter looked to Kruch and Nixon to Bush. Every one of them looked like they were to Hager, to Bush, to Bush. This guy, The other presidents were always going crazy because they couldn't figure out the solution. This man don't know there's a problem. Problems are not his field, no matter what goes on. He's the happiest president we ever had. I found out why he's so happy. He can't believe he got the job. He looks happier doing nothing than other presidents when they were busy. When he's doing nothing, he looks so happy, you think he did it already, you don't know what. He runs up and down with such pride, I'm doing nothing again. Everybody says, that's it. When Carter did nothing, he looked at you, knew he was doing nothing. He looked to Kruch and to Bush. But when Reagan does nothing, he's so happy. He came back from that meeting from Gorbachev. Remember that meeting with Reykjavik with Gorbachev? Remember that? Remember anything at all, mister? He came back from that meeting. Everybody said, what happened? He said, nothing. Everybody said, thank God. This is it. Not only that, he said, this is the greatest victory we ever had. Because of what? I wouldn't say he does nothing about everything. It would be unfair to say he does nothing about everything. About El Salvador, he did nothing. About Nicaragua, nothing. But when he found out there's 2 black people and a Chinaman in Grenada, he wiped them out. And I'm proud of him, because since then, Grenada has never attacked this country. For years, I couldn't sleep nights. I kept wondering, do you hear from Grenada? But people love him because he's tough, he's firm. That's right. That's why nobody voted for Mondale, because Mondale reminded everybody of Carter. Misery, nauseous delusion. He kept reminding it is a deficit, the whole campaign, a deficit, a deficit. Reagan gave him the perfect answer. He said, there's no deficit. Everybody said, but there is. He said, so there is. They said, what should we do about it? He said, don't mix me up. Then he worked out a whole plan how to solve the problem of the deficit. Remember his plan? He said, if you spend more and more money on defense and you're taking less and less in taxes, as it unbalances more and more, it balances out perfectly. They said, how does this work? He said, ha, ha, but you can't deny that he's been brilliant in this Iranscape situation. First, they blamed him for this whole Iran problem, and he said, I wasn't here and I never heard about it. Then he said, well, we have proof that you did hear it. He says, oh, you have proof? All right, so I heard of it. He said, but I wasn't involved with it, and I never had nothing to do with it. The press made an issue out of it. If they didn't mention it, nobody would have heard it. And if they never heard it, it never would have happened. And if it happened, nobody would have cared, because nothing went wrong. Everything was right. He said, but everything was wrong. He says, all right, so it was a little wrong. He said, but it stunk. He says, maybe it stunk, but it didn't stink as bad as they claimed, because a lot of it was good. Like what? He says, besides, it's not my fault. I wasn't here. But he said, but it happened in your own basement. He said, why would I go to the basement? Then it turns out the State Department never heard about it. The CIA never saw it. Nobody heard it. The Defense Department wasn't involved in it. Nobody in this government ever had anything to do with it, and nobody knows how it happened. It turns out that one kid by the name of North, who never made more than $85 a week, was controlling the whole world. And then Reagan said, as far as he's concerned, North is a national hero. That's right. And to prove he's a national hero, he fired him immediately. But you have to admit that Reagan was great in the Danilov case. He got Danilov out of Russia. And he was an innocent journalist that people thought he'd never be able to get out. But he got him out. First, he said he would never allow the Russians to equate an out-and-out spy with an innocent journalist. It's an equation he'll never accept, and it's an exchange that'll never happen. As long as I'm president, I will never accept a thing like that, and I'll never get away with it, because it'll never happen. And the next day, it happened. They said, why did you do it? He said, I didn't do it. They said, but you did. He said, it looks like I did. So I didn't do it. He said, just because one guy came and the other one went. He said, I did not do it. He said, first of all, one guy came 10 minutes before the other guy. He said, well, why did you let him out? He said, I did not let him out. The man left. What do you want from me? But we're not finished with him, because if he ever comes back, that son of a bitch. I'm making fun, but I shouldn't make fun of great people. I certainly shouldn't make fun of the great people of our time. That's why I never make fun of Menachem Begin, the ex-prime minister of Israel. That's truly the greatest man of our time. That's a speaker. I would never make fun of him as a speaker. Probably the most brilliant speaker of our time, and the greatest thinker and philosopher, the greatest, most brilliant orator in the world today. There's nobody as brilliant as Menachem Begin. I'll never forget those immortal words when he said, all right. All right, we took a look, we'll see what it is. We don't worry. All right, if we find out. It's like Richard Nixon said, there's another man I would never make fun of. Because Nixon is truly one of the greatest men of our time. People don't know what a wonderful person he is. But I loved him. I always loved Richard Nixon. You know why? I love a crook who knows his business. With Nixon, life was interesting. Every day there was something missing. You didn't know what. If he could see it, he took it. I used to get up every morning to see if my furniture was still there. See, Nixon was a true genius. Every week they caught him, and every week somebody else went to jail. And he kept saying, oh, I don't know what they're talking about. People say to me, you shouldn't pick on him, he's got phlebitis. It's syphilis, not phlebitis. You can't screw 200 million people and wind up with phlebitis. You notice I don't talk this way about Ronald Reagan, because I know Ronald Reagan is an honorable man. It's not his field, and that's nobody's business. People blame him for the deficit. I think it's unfair to blame him for the deficit. Even if he was the most brilliant man in the world, that's not his fault, and he can't do anything about it, because this is not a job for a Gentile. We need a Jewish president. We need somebody who could show a profit for this country. Let's be honest, this is the richest country in the history of the world, and every year we lose money. We haven't had one successful season yet. Somebody is fooling around with the books. That's not the real reason. The real reason is that the Congress and the Senate, they get paid whether we lose money or not, so they don't even care. Why should they care? I said, put them on commission. That's the only reason.
I started out by telling you, but it's true, that according to my religion, it's a sin to tell a dirty joke. That's why a real dirty joke you'll never hear from me. It's a sin to tell a dirty joke according to my religion. As a matter of fact, it's the same sin as the sin of eating bread on Passover. Did you know that? I made it up. I made that up, but I'll tell you something which is true. Did you know that according to my religion, and no matter what your denomination is, I wish you would listen to this very carefully, because you could learn great moral concepts of life from every religion in the world. In that respect, they're all the same in terms of morality. If you realize this and appreciate the significance of this, this will teach you a great lesson in life. Do you know that according to my religion, the sin of eating bread on Passover is comparable to the sin of adultery? Adultery and bread on Passover are comparable to each other. Remember that? Although I told this to a friend of mine, and he told me that he tried them both. And he can't see the comparison.
Do you ever still officiate as a rabbi?
I don't officiate as a rabbi anymore because I think it would be sort of sacrilegious. I don't really live a very religious life, because to live a religious life means I wouldn't be working on Friday nights. I take off on the holidays. I don't work in this theater on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. This Friday night I won't be working, or Saturday. But the simple fact is that I can't consider myself a strict observer of all the laws and rituals of Judaism. And to be a rabbi, you can't compromise with any laws or rituals in Judaism. You have to be a total observer of every religious idea, philosophy, and I can't claim that I'm such a perfect person.
So
you
we
know,
couldn't.
If I was a strictly religious guy, I wouldn't even touch a girl. I could see not touching a sandwich, but a girl, you know, it's a problem. And not only that, when I was a rabbi, I had to preach people that they should think only of spiritual values. They shouldn't be interested in women, and they should control themselves and avoid all these type of pleasures. And all of a sudden, a stunning girl would walk by. I would be mixed up for the next 20 minutes. I would lose my place in the sermon. And I couldn't continue to live like that. It's sort of hypocritical. You have to be honest with yourself and your conscience. And if you're not as strictly religious as that, I don't think you have a right to be a rabbi.
So you couldn't be persuaded to just officiate at a wedding, for instance, right?
Yes, at a wedding I could officiate it. That I would do, because you don't have to swear that you're a perfect person to officiate at a wedding. Even a person who's no bargain at all could officiate at a wedding.
Yeah, but who could afford you these days, right?
Thank God nobody could afford me at weddings, so I'm not invited to both.
Are you still Frank Sinatra's favorite comedian?
I don't know if I'm Frank Sinatra's favorite comedian, but I notice he hasn't kept in touch with me too much lately.
Which is something you may be grateful for.
Right.
I don't know why anybody would even want to live in Beverly Hills, because you never see a human being there. If you hate people, it's a perfect place. For a guy like you, it would be perfect, mister. If you ride around in Beverly Hills for 10 years, you'll never see a human being. 90,000 homes, no people. You never see a person, never. You see gates opening, closing, you don't know why, you don't know where. And a Japanese gardener, krichter, krichter, krichter. Nobody ever hired him, nobody ever paid him, he don't know where. He's walking around praying to God to find out who lives there. Who. You only see people in restaurants in Beverly Hills. And they're always talking deals in the restaurants, in the millions, in the billions. Without a job, billions, zillions. Then a check comes for $1.25, and 10 people run like something. Everybody sitting there is a producer without a job. Around here, if you're not working, you're unemployed. In Beverly Hills, everybody who's not working has the same thing. I'm a producer, here's my card. Here's my card, you see my card, I'm a producer. That's all they produce, cards. Here's my card. And they never have just one card, thousands of cards in every pocket. Here's the company I'm buying, I'm selling, this is the one I went into, I'm coming out of. Wait till you see this company. I hear this a company. Have I got a company coming, going, come? Are you making a living? Not right now, but I... He's starving to death, but the printer is making a fuss. You know what else they all have? They all have a Mercedes. A Mercedes, if you were ever in Beverly Hills, you'll notice a Mercedes over there is like a uniform. You can't call yourself a producer without a Mercedes. Everybody has to have a Mercedes, and they all have one. They got no money for gas, the Mercedes never moves. But they all have a Mercedes, because without it, you look like a total putz. Let's be honest, in every other city in this country, if you have a Cadillac, you look like a hit. People think you're a rich man. Everybody looks at you. You got a Cadillac? Oh, my God. In Beverly Hills, a guy with a Cadillac is so embarrassed. They're so embarrassed, they have a whole speech prepared. This is not my regular car. I don't know who left it here. I don't know how he got it. I told my sister-in-law, get your car out of here. I pity a Gentile in Beverly Hills. I really pity a Gentile because if a Gentile is in Beverly Hills and he can't afford a Mercedes, he doesn't know what to tell you. He has to admit he can't afford it. What else could he say? If a Jew can't afford a Mercedes, he thanks God he's Jewish. Every Jew who can't afford a Mercedes has the same speech prepared. You think I'm going to buy a German car? Meanwhile, everything in his house is from Germany. His camera, his watch, his shorts. Everything is from Germany, up to $87.50. But as soon as he found out a car is $50,000, those Nazi bastards. And what do you think these so-called producers are doing? First of all, they never live to make a picture. 90% of the time, they don't make a picture for 10 years, then they start working on the sequel. But as long as they're not making a picture anyway, they don't want to waste their time talking about budgets and actors and problems. They talk about sex. That's all they talk about, is where are they going to put the sex scene in every movie? And they all convince themselves that they're not interested in just sex for sex's sake. But let's be honest about it. Everybody has it, and everybody does it. And since everybody does it, movies should reflect reality. Because that's the essence of truth. Movies should reflect truth. And everybody has sex. That's what they tell you. And I keep wondering, everybody also has soup. How come I never see soup in any movie? Let's be honest, more people have soup than sex. That's right, you look to me like you had enough sex, but I'm sure you're ready for soup. I never heard anybody say, I'm too tired to get the soup. I never heard. Did your wife ever say, what a headache I got, soup is out, I never heard.
Well, what's next for you?
What's next for me is,
where you
that
gonna
I'm
go
doing,
from here?
Is that I just wrote a book that's coming out next month from Simon & Schuster, and the book is already hot. It's flying off the shelves. People who never read before are reading this book. And I found out they're all reading it from the floor. They can't even keep it in their hands. They've always, it's unbelievable what's happening. People are laughing their heads off at this book. It's a sensation already. And now I got lucky with an HBO special that's coming out in January. And NBC is doing a special with me next May. So I can't keep up with my own success. All of a sudden, it's too good to be believed.
Have you had any movie offers?
Yes, I have a definite movie from Lorimar that's being written right now by Neil Marshall, the guy who wrote Flamingo Kid was the hit movie that he wrote before.
Oh, that was a lovely movie.
Yeah, that was considered a great movie by the critics. I don't know how it did at the box office, but it was a celebrated movie artistically. Everybody got excited about it, so he became a hot writer, and he wrote the first draft of the movie already, and we expect it to be in great shape and ready to go around January.
Well, that's great.
This show is over. I don't know if you began to notice it. I was playing in Los Angeles, and I was a big hit over there, but it's still a frightening thought to come to Broadway because very often a big hit in Los Angeles dies in a minute on Broadway. Because if the critic from the New York Times says you stink, it's all over. That's right. But luckily the critic from the New York Times got very excited about me. He couldn't believe what a hit I was. He said this was such a great show. I'll tell you the truth, it was worth the few dollars that it cost. I never thought I'd be a comedian. Who expected it? And you come from a family of rabbis. I have three brothers who are rabbis to this day, and my father all his life was a rabbi. Everybody was a rabbi in the ancestry of my family. So when my father looked at me as his fourth son, naturally he waited for me to become a rabbi, and I wanted to make him proud by following in his in his footsteps, and I started to deliver sermons, and as I was delivering the sermons, I didn't feel honest, so I started to tell a few jokes here and there to make it more palatable for myself, and as the jokes were getting better and better, I started to charge a cover and a minimum. And as the Gentiles in the area heard about me, more and more Gentiles came to see me. So many Gentiles came that before you know it, there was no room for the Jews. The Jews couldn't get in there. I became the only rabbi of a Gentile congregation. So I hope you'll accept the idea that you made it possible for me to really be a star, and I thank you very much.
Well, I appreciate the whole idea of this interview. It shows that you wasn't busy either for the last 10 minutes. I hope your career improves, and if you do a one-man show, I'll be glad to help out. I'll do the same for you.
Well, thank you, Jackie. It was a pleasure talking to you, and continued good luck with the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And there you have it. That was our little salute to Jackie Mason with a conversation with him and all. And don't forget, if you're in New York, his show is called The World According to Me, which is also the title of his new album on Warner Brothers Records. And his book is published by Simon & Schuster, and probably the cocktail napkins to follow. I'm sure I left something out. The show, the record, the book, the movie, the cable special. Thanks, Jackie Mason. And let's see, next week's program is going to be edited highlights from a record put out, which is highlights from a British radio series called Radioactive. It's a takeoff on radio, and it's surprising to find out that the same dumb cliches that annoy us about American radio also annoy these people over there in England. So that should be a lot of fun. The address, Bob Claster, KCRW, 1900 Pico Boulevard, Santa Monica, California, 90405. And I'll be filling in for Michael Oakes for one last Saturday night, tomorrow night between 7 and 9. Watch Frank's Place. What else is there for me to tell you about? I think that's it. Actually, I think there's something else and I can't remember it, so I'll have to tell you about it next week. And until then, this is your host, Bob Claster, thanking you for listening and reminding you to always keep that sense of humor well exercised, because you never know when you're going to need it. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.